Today is Wednesday, March 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Myanmar police chase and fire at protesters. Nearly six protesters have died since the military takeover.
Basically, they keep showing that they are satisfaction or angry over the military takeover.
Plus, the UN raises concerns after nine are killed in the Philippines.
We are deeply worried that these latest killings indicate an escalation in violence, intimidation and harassment, and red tagging.
And computing at the quantum level. We'll have these stories and more next. Myanmar police chased protesters and fired at them on Tuesday. That took place in the country's northern Kachin state as anti-military coup demonstrators continued unabated despite a harsh crackdown which has left nearly 60 dead. VOA Burmese Service Chief Tan Luin Tun spoke to me about the ongoing protests.
Protests are still going on, but the momentum is actually not up. It is in a realistic way putting it. It is a bit more sporadic, but they are still going on, despite heavy handling of that security force. So, of course, day to day, there's a lot of protests and people coming out despite of the brutal response by that regime. So basically, they keep showing that they are satisfaction or angry over the military takeover. And they don't, obviously, they don't want to live under the military dictatorship. This is a quite clear expression. At the same time, they are just simply, one thing is supporting what they call it CDM, the Civil Disobedience Movement, which they encourage those people to not to go to work and then just to simply choke the government administrative machineries. So these are the only broad strategy. But apart from that, we don't actually know clear path. For example, like later on, there's some sort of organization or representative people called CRHP, Committee Representing Those Elected People from Aung San Suu Kyi Party. They form, but they gone under what I call underground, and they formed a kind of a parallel government style structure to lobby the West, and then also UN, and then start dealing with the West, those sympathetic countries as a kind of authoritative organization.
Luin, since so many countries have spoken out against the military action on February 1st that resulted in a coup, what has been the response by the military leadership in Myanmar to the international condemnation?
Oh, nearly every country in the world denounced the military takeover. And then they call for the release of Aung San Suu Kyi and the president. From the beginning, the Burmese military is try very much to portray themselves as they are acting legitimately under the current constitution. So they don't even call it is a military coup. They were just simply kind of maintaining the status quo or kind of a situation inside. A chaotic situation inside Burma or something like that. So they continuously try to convince their point of view or their story abroad by trying to say that, you know, we are very much lenient toward kind of street protester. We are using civilian laws only for the minimize that casualties or something like that. They try to convince. They will continue doing that, and also expecting that probably the whole war will be at the same time inside Burma, the protests will be dying down, and also the whole war will be looking at it in a different way to resolve that situation to get out from the kind of status quo. So this is the main strategy from the military. So for the other diplomatic angle, I don't see much of that Myanmar newly appointed foreign minister being so much active on that situation. expect that they've been, he's been talking with the ASEAN leader and also to the Japanese foreign ministry. But at the same time, the Myanmar military has hired a kind of a lobby firm from a Canadian-American lobby firm to lobby the White House and the United States Congress about just to present a military point of view. And also they will try to use that China card. If the U.S. push too much on the military, that the military will be kind of getting closer to China or something like that.
Tan Luen Tan is the VOA Burmese service chief. Phil Mercer reports Australia has acted against Myanmar's military in response to the country's escalating violence.
Australia says it's gravely concerned about the repression of protests in Myanmar since the democratically elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi was ousted by the military in early February. It's urged Myanmar security forces to exercise restraint and refrain from violence against civilians. Mass demonstrations have been held across the Southeast Asian country. The United Nations has said more than 50 people have been killed so far. In response, Australia has cut defence programs in Myanmar and has said humanitarian aid would be directed to the people. Foreign Affairs Minister Maurice Payne.
We have looked at the nature of the limited bilateral defence cooperation program we have had, and that has been suspended. We have also looked at the development program and development support that we have provided and redirected that with an absolute focus on the immediate needs of some of the most vulnerable and poor in Myanmar, which is one of the poorest countries in ASEAN.
Payne said the decision was made after extensive consultations with our international partners, particularly our ASEAN neighbours, Japan and India. Canberra is also concerned for the safety of Sean Turnell, an Australian academic who's been a key economic aide to Myanmar's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi. Her National League for Democracy party won a landslide victory in an election last November with more than 80% of the vote. The military has detained Suu Kyi and Turnell for more than a month along with others. Myanmar, also known as Burma, became independent from Britain in 1948. It was controlled by a repressive military government from 1962 to 2011. A government effectively led by Suu Kyi came to power after elections in 2015. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Leaders of the United States, Japan, Australia, and India will hold a virtual summit later this week. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
That President Biden has made this one of his earliest multilateral engagements speaks to the importance we place on close cooperation with our allies and partners in the Indo-Pacific. A range of issues, of course, will be discussed. We expect to be discussed, I should say, facing the global community, from the threat of COVID to economic cooperation and, of course, to the climate crisis.
Friday's meeting will take place days before U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin plan to visit Japan and South Korea. A Muslim group and the UN Human Rights Office have voiced dismay at a recent decision by Switzerland to ban face coverings in public. Those coverings include veils that some Muslim women commonly wear. UN Human Rights Office spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani says that countries with such bans are actively discriminating against Muslim women. In addition, she told reporters on Tuesday that the Office of the High Commissioner is appalled by the killing of 9 human rights activists in the Philippines.
We are deeply worried that these latest killings indicate an escalation in violence, intimidation and harassment and red tagging of human rights defenders. There is a history of human rights advocates being red tagged or being accused of being fronts for the armed wing of the Communist Party in the Philippines. In our June 2020 report, the High Commissioner warned that such public labeling has proved extremely dangerous, and she urged the protection of human rights defenders, journalists, and others at risk. In recent months, there have been dozens of other activists and several journalists arrested, including on Human Rights Day on the 10th of December 2020.
The 8 men and 1 woman were killed Sunday during simultaneous police military operations in Batangas, Cavite, Laguna, and Rizal provinces surrounding the Metro Manila area. Nearly one in three women worldwide are subjected to physical or sexual violence during their lifetime. Reuters' Olivia Chan takes it from here.
The organization believes it has gotten worse during the pandemic because lockdowns intensify certain risk factors, such as financial stress and having to live in confined spaces. Claudia Garcia Moreno is the author of WHO study, said to be the largest ever report on the subject.
It's about an estimated 736 and up to 852 million women that are affected. And most of this violence is perpetrated by current or former husbands or partners. This partner violence starts early. So we see that one in four of the young adolescent girls, age 15 to 19, 24% of these young girls who have been in a relationship have experienced or been subjected to either physical or sexual violence.
The study analyzed national data and surveys from 2000 to 2018. True figures of criminal violence aimed at women are likely far higher due to underreporting. The UN agency urged governments to prevent violence, improve services for victims, and tackle economic inequalities that often leave women and girls trapped in abusive relationships. WHO officials also said boys should be taught in school about the need for mutual respect in relationships and mutual consent in sex.
Olivia Chan reports for Reuters News. The U.S. Pentagon is set to sign off on having National Guard troops stay at the Capitol building for several more weeks. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
National Guard members have been protecting the Capitol since January's riot. Their deployment was due to end this week, but Capitol Police asked for a two-month extension as they worry about continued threats. Defense officials say Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin is expected to approve that. Officials had been scrambling to figure out how to fill the request for more than 2,000 Guard members. Some governors had flatly refused to commit troops or showed reluctance, but defense officials say there now appear to be enough states willing to provide troops. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Plus, two more men wanted in the deadly riot at the U.S. Capitol have been arrested, including one who reportedly served as a bodyguard to former President Donald Trump's longtime confidant, Roger Stone. At least five people, including a Capitol police officer, died as a result of the violence at the Capitol, and two other officers killed themselves afterward. More than 300 people have been charged with federal crimes. If you have questions or comments about any of today's stories, please connect with me on Twitter. You can find me at It's Steve Miller. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international group of astronomers discovered and studied the most distant source of radio emissions that has been found to date. In a study published by the Astrophysical Journal, the astronomers suggest the source of the radio signals is a quasar, one of the brightest objects in the universe. According to the study, the quasar, powered by a supermassive black hole, is pumping energy and radio wavelengths from its powerful polar jets. The astronomers calculated that the supermassive black hole is about 300 million times the mass of our sun. Study authors say light from this quasar, nicknamed P17218, has taken 13 billion years to reach us, which is only 780 million years after the Big Bang. Several powerful ground-based telescopes were used to make the discovery and subsequent findings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Kylie Moore Gilbert, a British-Australian academic who spent 2 years detained in Iran, said on Tuesday that she was kept in solitary confinement for 7 months. Reuters reporter Emily Wither has her story.
She has revealed she contemplated suicide during her two-year detention on espionage charges.
There were a few times in that early period that I felt broken. I felt, if I have to endure another day of this, you know, if I could, I'd just kill myself. But of course, I never tried, and I never took that step.
In an interview with Sky News Australia, the University of Melbourne academic explained what it was like to spend 7 months in solitary confinement with only a telephone to communicate with prison guards.
The extreme solitary confinement room designed to break you. It's psychological torture. You go completely insane. It is so damaging. I would say I felt physical pain from the psychological trauma I had in that room. It's a 2x2 meter box.
Moore Gilbert was detained in Iran in 2018 and sentenced to 10 years in prison. She fought the sentence through a series of hunger strikes, and in her most daring opposition, the academic says she once attempted to escape. She was eventually released in a prisoner swap for three Iranians who had been detained abroad. The Middle East politics specialist denied any wrongdoing, rejecting Iran's allegations that she was working as a spy for Israel. Now in Australia, she says she is focused on her recovery.
Reuters' Emily Wither. The idea of universal basic income, where every citizen receives a regular amount of money from the government, has long been considered a fringe or radical idea in South Korea. The coronavirus pandemic may be changing that. Bill Gallo has more from Seoul.
Lee Gon-hyung epitomizes a major problem with South Korea's economy. There just aren't enough jobs for young people. Nearly 30% of youth like Lee are unemployed or underemployed.
There was only part-time work in this job market, and my job just didn't provide enough income, and at a certain age, no one wants to ask your parents for help.
Lee didn't have to. He was one of tens of thousands of Koreans to get regular checks from the government simply because he was 24 years old. It's part of a bold economic project in this province just outside Seoul, which is increasingly handing out cash to its citizens. In addition to checks for 24-year-olds, the province is also giving out cash pandemic relief to everyone. The money must be spent at local businesses like this market, or will expire, a policy many business owners like.
The relief funds have been a huge help to our market. We have people coming here who ordinarily never shop at a local market.
The project is spearheaded by Governor Lee Jae-myung. He believes eventually all Koreans should receive universal basic income, or UBI.
It'll help consumption, lead to more demand, more employment, and more investment. And anyway, it's a future we can't avoid due to the fourth industrial revolution.
소득 재분배 정책인 동시에 경제 성장 정책이 될 수 있고 결국은 이거는 4차 산업혁명의 미래 세대에서는 결국 피할 수가 없을 것이다라고 생각합니다.
South Korea, one of the world's most technologically advanced societies, is at the forefront of that revolution. Cell phones and other technology long ago reshaped or even eliminated many human interactions. The pandemic has sped up that trend, creating a contact-free or untacked environment, as it's called in Korea.
Until now, UBI was just a theory in the textbooks. But with the pandemic, we've seen the digital, untacked environment it created and how labor isn't needed as much to produce things. I think the idea is gaining momentum.
결국은 이 기본소득 시스템을 도입하지 않으면 자본주의 경제 질서 자체가 유지존속이 어렵다는 위기의식이 생긴 상태 같습니다.
So much momentum that Lee is a front-runner to become president next year, though he has lots of critics.
What proponents of basic income overlook is that individuals need money and public services, and the state must provide those services. But they'll collapse if UBI is adopted.
The critics say UBI amounts to cheap populism, meant to win votes. They prefer more targeted welfare programs to help those in need. But direct cash payments are becoming a global trend. In the U.S., multiple stimulus checks have gone directly to bank accounts.
So I think there was already generally a direction toward accepting UBI in some form or another, but COVID perhaps accelerated it.
Whether that trend outlasts the pandemic is much less clear. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
1 year has passed since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a pandemic, and VOA's Steve Barragona has a look at what the coming months and years may look like.
After a year of empty streets and full hospitals in much of the U.S., the beginning of the end is in sight.
But I think by the fall, unless there's something very bad with variants that comes along, we're going to see sporting events in person. We're going to see social events, movies, theater, restaurants, and bars.
Vaccinations are speeding up. A third vaccine is online from Johnson & Johnson. And a rival company, Merck, will help increase supplies in a deal brokered by President Joe Biden's administration.
We're now on track to have enough vaccine supply for every adult in America by the end of May.
We'll have an oversupply, and I suspect that by the summer, we'll start to be donating our doses to low- and middle-income countries.
Gustin says it's in the interest of wealthy countries to make sure lower-income countries get vaccinated. Dangerous variants can appear anywhere the virus is spreading. They could slow the return to normal. Some are already weakening the vaccines. The shots still look effective, but new variants will keep evolving.
They're essentially a shot across the bow, telling us that this virus is sneaky and it has the ability to evade our defenses.
Another thing that could slow the return to normal? Relaxing control measures too soon, says University of Washington epidemiologist Ali Mokhtad.
So we made the same mistake last year, remember? And we have to be very careful right now. We should not repeat the same mistake, especially at a time where we know there are more variants coming up.
And yet, several states are doing just that. Texas Governor Greg Abbott.
All businesses of any type are allowed to open 100%. Also, I am ending the statewide mask mandate.
Biden called the move Neanderthal thinking.
I think it's a big mistake. Look, thank you. I hope everybody's realized by now these masks make a difference.
In the long term, the biggest problem may be people who do not trust the vaccines. Surveys say that's about a quarter of Americans, a third of people in six African countries, and 79% in Lebanon, to name a few.
There is deep hesitancy. I think people will get less hesitant as they see this working and they see their neighbors and family members getting vaccinated. But there will be a small group of people who don't want the vaccine.
That sets the stage for flare-ups down the road. Ultimately, COVID-19 may be here to stay, so an annual COVID shot may be too. Experts say that means many more countries need vaccine manufacturing plants, so the world is not stuck again with shots for rich countries while everyone else is left behind. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
And finally, a breakthrough in advanced quantum technology, which is frequently compared to fictional elements of the popular science fiction television show Star Trek. The developments could revolutionize everyday life around the world. VOA's Kane Farabaugh reports from Batavia, Illinois, on the technological leap pioneered, in part, by a U.S. laboratory.
When news spread late last year that the Fermilab National Accelerator Laboratory in suburban Chicago was part of a project achieving quantum teleportation.
Now, Doctor.
Conjured up scenes from the classic science fiction franchise Star Trek, in which the show's characters could beam from one location to another.
That's not what we're doing here. What we're doing here actually is we're moving information without even physically moving the qubit that contains the information.
Fermilab scientist Pangiotis Spensouris is one of the co-authors of a study documenting the advancement of sending or teleporting information, or qubits, a unit of quantum computing code, over 40 kilometers through fiber cables. It brings developers one step closer to building a sustainable and widely used quantum internet, which would allow a lot of information to be shared faster and more securely.
Quantum communication has very appealing attributes. I mean, you cannot eavesdrop in a way that will not be detected.
What we achieved here with the systems is that we have produced systems that they can continually operate and perform quantum measurements at all times as a system, not just as a single experiment.
Physicist Maria Spirpulu, based at the California Institute of Technology in Pasadena, California, says quantum teleportation could sustain networks that enhance GPS and speed up and amplify communication at great distances with spacecraft and probes, among many other possibilities. While building a new quantum internet would revolutionize the way we share sensitive information, the physical technology to make it all work is still in its infancy.
You try to make them forward compatible so that when material scientists and condensed matter people give you more instrumentation and devices, more advanced devices, that you can plug them in.
In 2020, the U.S. Department of Energy laid out a blueprint for a national quantum network using its 17 national laboratories, including Fermilab, as the central network for the project. Scientists and researchers say it represents one of the most important technological frontiers of the 21st century and hope to implement it in the next decade.
There has been a lot of investment worldwide and in the U.S. for, I want to say, 30, maybe 40 years. It is well funded and explored, and there's both industry and academia and government that has invested.
But experts say today's technology, which only teleports information,
the barriers between quantum realities are breaking down,
is still a long way off from realizing the dreams made popular by Star Trek.
It doesn't mean that we can beam up Scotty or anybody else or a cat or anything else.
We cannot move matter right now, and if we ever manage to do it, it's going to be with a different process.
A process that, unlike quantum teleportation, still only exists in the realm of science fiction. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Batavia, Illinois.
And you've been listening to International Edition of the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with world news and events 24 hours a day. You can do so by visiting our website. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States stands in support of the people of Burma as they continue to protest the February 1st military coup that overthrew the democratically elected government of Burma, said State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
We stand with the people of Burma and support their right to assemble peacefully, including their right to protest peacefully in support of the democratically elected government, the right to freedom of expression, including the freedom to seek, receive, and impart information both online and offline.
The United States has strongly condemned the February 1st coup and continue to demand the restoration to power of the democratically elected government, the release of all those detained, and the cessation of attacks on journalists, activists, and other civil society members. We have called for maximum restraint and made clear to the military junta that violence against the people is unacceptable and will not be tolerated. The United States has galvanized a broad coalition of partners and allies to press the military to reverse its actions. On February 11th, the United States sanctioned 10 current and former military officials involved in the coup and three Burmese extractives companies owned or controlled by the military. Furthermore, the United States is reviewing U.S. assistance that benefits the Burmese government. However, the United States is continuing our strong support for the people of Burma and humanitarian assistance, health care, civil society, and other programs that benefit the people of Burma. In response to the coup, USAID was immediately redirecting approximately $42.4 million of assistance away from work that would have benefited the government of Burma. These funds will be redirected toward activities that support the people of Burma by helping support civil society's capacity to guard democracy, bolstering independent media, and promoting peace and reconciliation in violence-affected regions. The United States will also continue to provide life-saving humanitarian assistance to Rohingya and other vulnerable populations. The United States will not waver in support for the people of Burma and their aspirations for democracy, freedom, and prosperity. That is our priority, said spokesperson Price. Standing with the people of Burma, together with our like-minded allies, our like-minded partners, leaving no doubt for the people of Burma as they continue to voice their aspirations for a return to democracy and take to the streets.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.